It's Sunday, the 8th of January, 2006. You're listening to the Pod Report, and we're going to be bringing global justice straight to your ear. Hello, Pod Report.
Have a nice day.
Welcome to the first ever Pod Report for 2006. You're listening to the Pod Report. I'm Andy Parnell, the host for the show. And of course, as always, we're bringing global justice straight to your ear tonight. We've got a few interesting things in store. The general theme of tonight is about the earlier periods, the earlier generations of, social justice activists. And the sorts of things that we might be able to learn from history. We've obviously had some history about these things previously, and it seems like today we're learning the same lessons all over again, which is quite interesting. So there are very similar parallels that I'd like to draw from previous times to the current times that we live in. And amongst them, I'll be talking about the New York Photo League, which was a workers' league for photography. Based in the USA, I think in New York, and also Magnum, which was a photo agency that came out of the, it was the brainchild of Robert Capa and also Henri Cartier-Bresson, and is now a very much a multi-million pound outfit. But it started off as a very much a left-wing photo agency. And we'll also be talking about, I was in Paris the other week, and unfortunately I couldn't get a podcast out. My BT line was down for something like 20 plus days, and has only just recently been fixed, so apologies to listeners if they were thinking that they would get a show to download last week. Unfortunately, I couldn't due to lack of communication. But in any case, I was in Paris and I did do a short report from Paris, so we'll have a listen to that as well. Okay, I'm just going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with some feed on the New York Photo League. Okay.
Cultures in Africa. What do you know about my people smoking sensimilla? What do you know about the war going on in the past? What do you know about the system with the peace of the peace? See what you know about the source where your message is from. Propaganda warfare is going on.
Propaganda warfare is going on. Propaganda warfare is going on.
dann sehr lieber aus. Habe mich zurückgezogen in mein kleines sicheres Haus. Ich beobachte Tag für Tag aus einer geschützten Position. Und was ich da sehe, das mag ich nicht. Ich glaub es nicht, oh. Du kannst mir erzählen, was du willst, solange du nur eine Seite kennst. Hast du keine Sicherheit, die andere als dein Feind zu nennen. Du musst dir schon die Mühe machen, beide Seiten zu verstehen. Dann kannst doch ohne Zweifel ein gerechtes Urteil geben. Hast du Zweifel, dann glaub es nicht. Glaub es nur, wenn du sicher bist. Hast du Zweifel, dann glaub es nicht. Glaub es nur, wenn du sicher bist. Propaganda, Propaganda, Warfare, Propaganda, 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 Warfare, 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 Propaganda,
Yes, that was Jammin' Inc. with Propaganda. And if you'd like to find out more about Jammin' Inc., you can go to www.jammin-inc.de. Okay, so back to the New York Photo League. The New York Photo League started in the 1930s. I think it was founded in 1930. And it was founded by people like Paul Strand and other such prominent left-wing people who were obviously very much associated with the Communist Party of America back then. And throughout history, there's been many a time when the left and right have used various means of communication to get their message across. And back in the 30s, when many men back then were very much had seen what capitalism did during the Depression, for example, and so on. So they set up things like workers' leagues and so on. And don't forget, the trade union movement was very strong at the time. And with the recent revolutions in places like Russia and so on, they were very much geared towards helping to support that movement to give workers rights and so on. So originally there was a period in history in the USA where the Film and Photo League was founded, but before that there was the Workers' Camera Club, which was associated very much with the Communist Party. Anyway, there were various different, to cut a long story short, there were various different strategies for taking this forward, and out of the sort of the internal debate came the New York Photo League, which was it broke from its Communist Party roots, but very much still was very much left leaning, so to speak. It was later on, in the 50s, it was accused, many of its members were accused of being Reds under the beds during the McCarthyism period, and of course it was strongly suppressed. But they had all sorts of people come out in their defence, including Adam Ansell's F-64 group. And anyway, cut a long story short, it had been a very, very successful photo cooperative for left-wing activists. Another such organization that came out of that period of the 30s was Magnum. Now, Magnum was a photo agency that was started a bit later on, in fact, after the period in which the Spanish Civil War occurred, and has been going strong ever since. Another such group that took the social movements of the left forward to to enhance and further the goals of social justice was a photo agency by the name of Magnum. Now, Magnum is now a multi-million dollar outfit, like I said earlier. But back then, it started off in 1947, and it was founded by Robert Capa, Henri Cartier-Bresson, George Roger, and David Chim Seymour. Now, of course, all of these, just about all of these people were involved in both the Spanish Civil War and also involved in taking photos during the and also helping out with the resistance in World War II. So all along, this organization that started off as a photo agency had done something that no other photo agency had thought of, no other photographers had thought about before, and it came up with this revolutionary idea that photographers should keep the rights of their own work. Now, before that, it was assumed by the newspapers and so on that the rights would automatically go, when they bought the photos, the rights to maintain any royalties and so on from that photo were then in the hands of the newspapers and the journals and the magazines. And Magnum came up with this idea that, no, in fact, it should be the artists that maintain and keep the rights to their work. And obviously today you've got things like Creative Commons license and so on that allows you to maintain some rights and so on. But the early days you had no rights whatsoever if you were a photographer. And they changed that, as well as doing many, many other great things. And one of my favourites amongst them is Henri Cartier-Bresson, because he was also a serialist. And, of course, as you're probably all aware, I'm one of those. And he came up with some ingenious ways around things and has managed to appear where many other people were, you know, just couldn't ever get into. So some of his photos throughout history, you'll see, absolutely amazing. I mean, he's regarded as one of the masters of photography. And in fact, many serialists were, including Man Ray. And of course, Magnum went on to cover many wars. And these days, it hasn't changed that much in the sense that it's still, a lot of the members are still very much left-wing leaning and so on, and still very much looking for the truth. Like any good journalist should, but also, of course, they're still they're obviously a business and they still have to make money. So there is the kind of corporate side these days to Magnum. But in the early days, it was very much a cooperative formed along communist lines, and very much the sort of values and so on that came with that got them covering things like the Vietnam War. Gandhi's assassination, all sorts of things. And they're still going strong. And in fact, to make it into the Magnum elite these days is to be regarded as kind of one of the best photographers in the world, even though it doesn't actually pay that much. So many, many photographers, photojournalists and so on are desperate to get into Magnum. And anyway, there you go. So, moving on, I'm now going to take us, have a quick break, and then I'm going to take us on a trip to Paris. And we're going to explore what Montparnasse is like today. Okay, be back soon. Thank you. Yes, that was The Core, a jazz band, and the song was called Mobius Triplet. If you'd like to find out more about The Core, their website is http://thecoremusic.blogspot.com. So that's thecoremusic.blogspot.com. Okay, I'm now going to hand you over to myself when I was in Paris, going back a week now, and here's what I had to say about the Montparnasse region. The Montparnasse region, by the way, is used to be where the so-called avant-garde, although they would have a fit if you said that term, but basically the place where all the progressive people used to hang out in the 20s and 30s. And the report is about what's happened since. So here it is. Okay, we're here in the Montparnasse Cemetery in Paris, and we're podcasting from the cemetery. A lot of the early surrealists from the 20s and 30s are buried here, including Man Ray and also the famous Dadaist Tristan Tzara and several others. So it's New Year's Day and it's pretty quiet and a rather cool place. So back in the 20s and 30s, I guess there's been several movements where the left have come to prominence, and the 20s and 30s was one such period, and also the 60s and 70s. And each time round, you had certain groups of people who had some big ideas, and the Surrealists obviously did in Paris in the 20s. But these days, you've had Montparnasse Cemetery has become very grand, I guess. You've also got a few other famous people here, like the famous sociologist Emily Durkheim, and many others. Anyway, so Montparnasse has become really the preserve of the rich these days, who've all cashed in on the old surrealist movements and so on, the old artistic movements as well from the early periods, and it's become hip and trendy for the rich and famous to be buried here at Montparnasse Cemetery. A moment ago I went down to Le Dôme, which is a famous restaurant cafe that used to be the preserve of the Surrealists. And I can tell you now they'll be turning in their grave to see what it's been turned into. It's really been turned into an eating house for the bourgeoisie and the petty bourgeoisie. And, you know, food prices there are astronomical. None of the Surrealists of yesteryear would ever be able to afford to eat there anymore. And that used to be where people like Henri Cartier-Bresson and André Breton and Tristan Tzara and many, many other people that were around in the 20s and 30s used to hang out. People like Max Ernst and Max Jacob and so on. And it's such a shame. It really has become the preserve of the rich, this whole area of Paris. And you'll probably find there's been many periods in history where this has happened. We went to a jazz club last night in Montparnasse called Le Petit Journal Montparnasse. And it was, how can we put it? It was like being on, we didn't actually stay there, we just looked in and realised it was a bit bourgeois for us. And it was very much a bit like a sea cruise for old people, all in that place. And the type of jazz they were playing really much was for old people. It wasn't avant-garde at all. It wasn't any cool jazz or anything like that. And it was rather dull. So we went to the Latin Quarter instead, to Café Universal, which was much more, the sort of jazz they played there was a much more in the line of Miles Davis and so on, and it was pretty good. So what can we say? I mean, Paris has changed a lot, and the new areas where the Surrealists hang out these days is nowhere near here in Montparnasse. It's just far too co-opted into the establishment, and it's such a shame. So that's the psychographic makeup of Paris today for the old movements, and they've moved to a new neighbourhood. I won't give out the location, but it's definitely a different location from here. I'll give you a website when I get back to Britain, where I've got access to a computer to look it up for you, and we'll get you hooked into exactly where the latest Surrealist movement is going. So that's it from Paris. Hope you have a happy new year, a bonne année, and we'll see you next week for another interesting discussion. Bye now. Au revoir. Well, for those still interested in exactly where the Paris Surrealist group is situated, you can check out their website if you go to http /// and then lowercase surrealisme, which is surrealisme .uvaton, which is ouvaton.org. Okay, so that's the Paris Surrealist group if you'd like to find out more about modern day surrealism, because things have changed vastly since then. Right, we're running out of time as usual, and this time we're going to call it a night. Don't forget, check out our show notes. You can go to www.podreport.podomatic.com, and of course, if you want to email the show at any time, it's podreport@podomatic.com. Right, I hope you have a good first few weeks of January, and I'll see you again next week with no doubt another great podcast. Catch you later.